Again, good morning or afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to eInform.org. We are very glad you could join us today. I am Amy Sebring and will serve as your host. We will be providing some instructions as we go along for any first-timers, so you can relax and participate with us. Now, if you need assistance, you can use the hand-raising button in the participants panel, and then our associate, Lori Weber, will try to assist you via the private chat. Now, today's topic is about the tools and resources available from FloodSmart that you can use in your own communities to educate your residents about flood risks. We know that there is still a good deal of misunderstanding out there in the public, although flooding happens all the time and in most parts of the country. Ultimately, this is all about resilient communities. First, for the benefit of any newcomers, we will begin with an overview presentation, and then we will proceed to your questions and comments. We will provide further instructions just before we begin the Q&A, but we ask you not to submit your comment or question until we do get to that part of the program. We are making a recording, which should be available later this afternoon, along with a copy of today's slides. And then the text transcript will be posted early next week. Now, if you're not on our mailing list, you can subscribe from our homepage, and then you will get a notice when these materials are ready, as well as any future announcements for programs coming up. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce Andrew Eastman. Andrew is a contract program manager for the FloodSmart program and is responsible for oversight and management of the marketing, advertising, and public relations for FEMA's National Flood Insurance Program. He's also a first responder himself as a 17-year veteran of the Volunteer Fire Service, and he currently serves as fire chief of the Dunn-Loring Volunteer Fire and Rescue Department in Fairfax County, Virginia. Please see today's background page for further biographical detail and related links. Welcome, Andrew. Thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today. I now turn the floor over to you to start us off, please. Wait, let me get you, make you presenter.
Great. Amy, thank you for that very nice introduction, and I'm very pleased to have the opportunity to speak out to a community that I'm very familiar with and is very close to my heart as a first responder and chief officer. But beyond that, my responsibilities really rely heavily on a large team of specialists who support FEMA in an effort to educate the community about flood risk and how they can better prepare themselves, not only through traditional preparedness activities but through and mitigation activities, but also through financial security and flood insurance. So we tried to tackle the question from a couple of different fronts, and I'm going to give you a little bit of overview this afternoon, depending on where you are, on the FloodSmart program and what we do to engage the public as well as the insurance industry, who is a key partner of ours, and stakeholders like yourselves who can help spread the news about flood education, about flood risk, and the options that homeowners and commercial business owners have, as well as condominium and renters, to purchasing flood insurance to help protect themselves more effectively against the risk of flooding. I'm going to go ahead and take you through a little bit of the background on the FloodSmart campaign. We'll try not to go too deep into that, but I want to make sure that we're level set on our understanding of what it's all about and how we accomplish our goals. I'm going to also share with you some campaign learnings, as we call it, which may be beneficial to you in not only flood outreach, but outreach across all other emergencies and hazards that you deal with on a day-in, day-out basis. And then I'm going to provide you an overview of various tools and resources that are available to you through FloodSmart via our website and directly from us as is needed. We actually work in conjunction with many different programs to try and accomplish the overall goal of flood risk education. As you see on this particular slide, we work not only hand-in-hand with other FEMA partners, such as the Risk Mitigation Division and the Risk Map Initiative that's really focusing on the remapping activities that are taking place across the nation. But we also work with other stakeholders like the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and their Silver Jackets teams across all the different states. We also reach beyond that to communities such as emergency managers, county officials, floodplain management professionals, and anyone who really has a role in not only flood education, but flood preparedness and flood response. FloodSmart, first and foremost, is a marketing campaign, and its goal is to really educate Americans about flood risk. And once they understand what their risk is, whether they're in a high-risk area or a moderate to low-risk area, encourage them to really financially protect themselves with flood insurance. Right now, as emergency managers, I'm sure you're well aware that a lot of the public has a perception that FEMA is there to bail them out in the time of disaster. And as you no doubt know, that disaster assistance, if it is granted at an individual level, really provides only a limited amount of funds to help a family get back on their feet and nothing for the real long-term recovery. So our goal is to get the focus off of disaster assistance and try and clear the misconceptions of that and drive people to a greater understanding of their flood risk and how they can protect themselves through insurance, which will provide them many more benefits and the ability not only get back on their feet, but to restore their lives to back close to what they had previously. We do have an annual goal set for us to try and increase policies held by consumers by 5% annually. Marketing along these lines is fairly sophisticated and really takes into several different types of approaches, public awareness being one that you're very familiar with in your roles as emergency managers. But we also do a lot of direct-to-the-consumer marketing, which you might be more familiar with as a consumer yourself, with when various companies who offer products and services reach out to the consumer through a variety of different means to get them to take the call to action and actually transact, whether it's a policy or buying a product, et cetera. And then we also have to work from the business-to-business front to ensure that the business community, who is also a supporter of this, can get in there and help out and that they understand what is available to them as potential flood victims in the future. So we have an integrated campaign, and that includes not only an official website known as floodsmart.gov, but we also provide a secondary website for the insurance industry, who is a key partner in this. We complement this with search engine marketing. So we use keywords that we buy through Google to ensure that consumers are directed to information on flood insurance and to the website. We also do online marketing through what are called banner ads, online display ads, shown on any number of different websites. We do something that's called direct response TV. This is the industry term for television commercials. When a television commercial has a call to action to dial a specific number or go to a specific website, we track the consumer when they actually make that call or click on that URL to go to a website. Excuse me. Additionally, we have a very robust direct mail campaign. We actually find that direct mail is much more effective in this environment than in other product or service arenas. And so we do concentrate heavily on this and see a tremendous consumer response to it. We run print ads, whether this is in local papers or national papers. We also do magazines. We have cooperative advertising programs with insurance industry where they can place ads in yellow pages as well as on the radio. So a number of different formats in that regard. And we have a very heavy public relations, media relations program, much as you might at your level within your communities. We're interacting with the national and local media based on current events, what is happening, and what their needs are. And we have a plethora of resources for the media and for the public on factual information about the National Flood Insurance Program, as well as flood risk information and flood insurance information. And then finally, as I mentioned earlier, we do radio advertising as well. So So, you know, a few things to prompt your thinking. I'm sure you're aware that many of your constituents have misconceptions about flooding, about what they have to do to prepare for it. But, you know, we went to ask our consumers a series of questions, and one of those is, as you see on the screen, what percent of Americans believe that they're prepared for a disaster? And you probably know this answer just as well as we do. It's an alarming only 16%. And so much of what we're trying to accomplish at FEMA, as you're well aware of, in the messaging that the Administrator Craig Fugate is sending out to the emergency management community, is to build that resiliency within the community and to continue to educate and clear up the misconceptions and build awareness to ensure that the individual citizen is taking more responsibility for their preparedness. So the question to follow on with was, why aren't we prepared? And here's a couple of different answers that were fairly common. But that begged the question of, you know, what kind of state are they in? What's their state of mind? Why are they thinking this way? So our research continued to address the issue of the state of denial, which is what we find a lot of our consumers are facing when they're talking about disasters and specifically flooding. So some of the common responses we found: it didn't flood last time, so it won't flood next time. I live behind a levee, so I'm safe. I'm not in a flood zone, so I won't be flooded. And I've lived here for 20 years without a flood, so I'm not at risk. And then, you know, one of the fun ones, we set under a high pressure zone, we won't get a big storm. So understanding that these are real responses from real consumers and constituents out there, you know, really leaves us with great concern about what their frame of mind is in regards to flooding as a disaster altogether. So what's not working? Well, there's a 1% chance isn't a meaningful way to communicate. We've suffered historically by the term of the 100-year or the 500-year floodplain. And at that point in time that those terms were coined, it probably seemed like a really good idea to try and put it in the context that a consumer or a citizen might understand. But what we have found historically is continuing to reference to the fact that they're in a 100-year floodplain sets that image in their mind that, well, if it hasn't flooded in the last 10 years, I've got another 90 years to go before I'll have the next flood. And as you and I know, that's just not reality. So we're trying to get back to educating them about their flood risk and what a 1% chance really means so that they are better prepared to make better decisions about how to protect themselves and prepare for a disaster in the future. Personal experience. You know, a lot of people rely on that personal experience, and therefore it's really not a good gauge of whether things are going to happen, as you know. So our real challenge is overcoming resistance. And for risk communication, their messages must be more personally relevant. We really need to make it personal and local. What we find is when we aggregate the numbers and give a larger, broader perspective, like flooding is the number one natural disaster in the United States. Well, that sounds really powerful as a message, but when we get down to how does that apply in our local communities, what are the real risks? People have a short-term memory, and they tend not to remember what happened 6, 9, even a month or a year ago. And so we have to continually remind them that the risk persists. And what we have found is that aggregating information at the local level, we've had X number of disasters here, we've had X number of floods, X number of hurricanes, tornadoes, severe storms, severe weather storms in the winter, severe snow causing runoff, all these sorts of things, if we can localize it and make it more personally relevant to the individual, they're more likely to make that connection. So a lot of our tactics, when we focus at that local level, is doing that specifically. So we do a lot around flood anniversaries, major flooding events that they can be aware of. And then we have seasonal outreach that we follow around hurricanes, winter flooding, and spring flooding seasons. Messages must be heard. Coming from multiple messengers is critical. what we've learned about the community today that is different from a decade ago or further is that people rely more heavily now due to social media on peer networks. And so getting the influence from others that aren't officials is very important. We found that people are more likely to decide whether they're going to buy a product or a service if they've heard good things from their friends or someone in their community that they trust and admire. And so we try and now tap into that by creating multiple messengers beyond just government officials, beyond emergency management professionals, beyond the federal government, to try and convey that same message, and we try and do that simultaneously to get the most benefit. We also want to make sure that our messages are actionable. We need to really lead the consumer to ensure they know what to do to take action. Just telling them that they're at risk only confounds the issue more for them. Providing them the information up front is very valuable so they understand what they can do next to take action to prepare themselves. What are the tools they have available to you? So make the risk relevant. The more local, the better. What has happened in your community? What are the potential sources of flooding? Do the people in your community understand that there are actually floodplains around them? Do they understand that they don't just have to be in a severe floodplain to be a victim of flooding? Is there major ongoing development in your area where the earth is being raised in order to build new developments of townhomes or apartment structures or whatever it might be, and as a result, you know, there's no vegetation left to absorb that runoff? Is there a ski resort because you have a mountainous region and you have heavy snowfalls, and as a result, you get that spring melt, and then we get flooding that occurs on a cycle from that? Are people aware that when there's heavier snowfall, that there's going to be a greater potential for flooding and that the flood levels may be higher than what has occurred in the past? Any a number of things. And sometimes it doesn't even take a natural disaster to cause this. There can be other man-made disasters that result in flooding, stormwater backups, sewage system backups, anything along those lines. If the stormwater system is not well maintained, just a series of light rains over time can cause the backup and then can cause the flooding, and then we have people in the situation where they didn't even realize that it was a disaster. Also, we need to personalize the message. People react personally to personally identifiable situations. So if they've experienced something in the past, whether it's in your community or somewhere where they came from or they have relatives who experienced it, that is a very effective way to get the message across. And they want to hear that message from people like themselves. You know, when you get the government official up there, those people who tend to not trust the political infrastructure then are going to tune it out. And so we really want to look at people who are recognized to be from their peer group to convey that information as well. We do that through testimonials, people who have been victims of flooding that can help communicate that message. We also want to make sure that we target the message to the audience. Ensure you know who you're speaking to and you craft that message to their level of understanding. Use multiple messengers, as I talked about before. So, for example, I've got a lot of different logos up here from the state of Texas, but this would be an example. If you were in Texas, not only do you want to work with the independent insurance agents, you also might want to work with the realtors, the building associations, the water development boards, the stormwater management, as well as the news media. In Texas, we actually had a meteorologist from a Houston station who was a victim of flooding and didn't have flood insurance and later rebuilt and got flood insurance and got flooded again. He was a perfect candidate for conveying a message, and he was a person that people trusted. And so it was very effective to use as a testimonial. So look at ways to work with others in your community beyond just your government officials and the peers that you have in your own group to try and communicate that message. Also, we need to send that message to expect more from people. And this comes directly from Administrator Fugate. down through the whole emergency management community. We need to let people understand what they need to do and that they need to own their own preparedness and not be so reliant on the emergency management structure to bail them out of the system whenever there's a flood. And we have to provide them those detailed specifics as to what they can do. Number of different campaigns around flooding. Some of those are not only from FEMA, but also from the Corps of Engineers, from the floodplain management community, the Fire and Rescue Service, a number of different ways where we can partner to try and get a common message out there around preparedness and awareness. Communicating consequences is critical in delivering the message. So we focus on the threat to security, how it can impact their financial fortitude in the future, how savings could be drained. We look at the way it's as a threat of their way of life. You know, could I lose my home, my positions? Could it destroy my children's college education hopes? Could it destroy my business? Could I end up being homeless and destitute? They really need to understand how severe this can be. And we really have to ensure that they understand the threat to their peace of mind. It is not pleasant. If you've ever dealt with a flood, it is a really horrible environment to recover from. So we need to ensure that we are reaching out when decisions are being made. We can do this through weather events, flood anniversaries, various safety and emergency management events that are going on, map changes, if there are map changes occurring in your community, levees, coastal issues, as well as those people who are moving. So we're looking at all these different aspects continually and understanding the audience and what is most important to them to try and ensure that when they're making their decisions, when they're moving, that they understand what happens in their community. Does it flood? Do they experience severe weather? Are they down the road from a levee? Are they close to coast and could experience coastal surges, et cetera? So those are all the things that go into our thinking around the FloodSmart resources and tools. And so I wanted to now talk to you about what is available to you as emergency managers to leverage. And we've actually assembled a specific web page at floodsmart.gov for community officials. And it's this is the screen capture of that web page. And it provides a whole series of opportunities for you to help others get smart about flooding. And so we have some get started tips. We have information about flooding and your community, and then tools and resources. And I'll go into this a little bit more. Some of those resources are focused on coastal issues. Others are focused on levee issues. We have information about the commercial environments, so those business owners out there that need to be aware of what's available to them, as well as residential. So we recognize that the largest pool of constituents are the residential homeowners, and so a lot of tools are focused on them so that we can increase their awareness overall. We have shareable tools. We have actual what we'll call applets. They are animated scenarios where you can interact with them and gain different information. One of those is a flood risk scenario. So you can actually go in and look at how much an inch of flooding would cost based on average claim estimates over time. And then you can increase that up to 7 inches, 12 inches, even up to 18 inches, and it will give you some expectation of what the losses would be. People often just don't understand that the cost of flooding can be significant, that 1 inch can just cause tens of thousands of dollars of damage in their homes. So this tool helps them understand that. Cost of flooding tool gets into, again, those cost elements, takes beyond the risk and gets really into the cost elements. So we have the flood risk scenarios explaining how flooding can occur, and then the flood cost of flooding tool to explain the cost elements. And then finally, for those of you who are in communities where there are levees, we've developed last year a levee simulator to talk about the potential dangers of living around a levee. And it talks about overtopping and undermining and all these different types of levee failures that occur. And we have to try and convey that message to those around levees that don't have a false sense of security just because you have a levee that's protecting you. Levees are only good to a certain point. and water levels, as we could see last year on the Missouri and Mississippi, it demonstrated how even the best of levees that are maintained appropriately can still be overtopped and have flooding behind them. We also have seasonally themed widgets. So on the website, and we'll go to the website in a few minutes just so I can show you where these are located. The seasonal themed widget, these are little applets that you can embed on your own website. So if your city or your county or your state has websites specifically focused for emergency management, you can take these and add them as code into those websites. If you don't know how to do that, work with your webmasters. They can go to our website, pull them off, and you get professionally done information that is consistent with the FEMA marketing message that gets the message out to consumers on these different topics. So those are available not only on floodsmart.gov, but also on FEMA.gov at the URL at the bottom of the screen. I saw a question earlier about social media and how do we tune in using smartphones. We are actively using social media content that reaches out to that community of users who are more interested in the social networking environments. So working with FEMA External Affairs, we have a regular program of sending messages out through Twitter that continues to call attention to flood and flood risk, flood awareness, and flood insurance. And then we also have a tab on the Facebook site for FEMA that provides much of the same information that is available on floodsmart.gov, but is focused more towards those users who prefer Facebook versus traditional website. So we have the various resources online, and I won't go into those right now too much deal, but kits of information that you can use for flood outreach if you're around levees or if you want to work with your insurance professionals in your community. We have updated map change toolkits, so if you're in a community that's going through remapping, a lot of consternation amongst the public who are going through this, and so we have tools out there to help community officials such as yourself actually go in and help communicate more effectively the pros and cons of remapping and what an individual can do to be prepared for a map change. Coming soon, we're always developing new tools. We have a coastal simulator currently in development, should be out later this year. Much like the levee simulator, it's going to talk about what happens in the coastal environment when you get storm surges that come in and how it will impact residences and other structures on the coastline. We also have several coastal videos in development, one for the Gulf Coast community, others for those in the Northeast that deal with the nor'easters that come up their way. We also are looking at the Great Lakes community and the types of flooding that they deal on a coastal basis, as well as the West Coast storms. And we'll be developing a whole coastal web page as part of floodsmart.gov to address coastal issues specifically. And that's one of those areas where we're working collaboratively with other organizations like the Corps of Engineers and the National Weather Service. We also are working on a regional direct mail campaigns that focus on coastal issues. Right now, up on floodsmart.gov, we do have two coastal testimonials. These are flood survivors from Hurricane Irene last year. And so we have one up in the Northeast in Waterbury, Vermont, so talk about the issues that they had up in that region, which was really caught them off guard. And then someone from a longtime residence of the Outer Banks of North Carolina who deals with flooding regularly and in this case flooded as a result of Hurricane Irene. So two very powerful testimonials that I encourage you to take a look at, consider using, linking to on your websites, et cetera. So as I mentioned before, we have a community tab on the floodsmart.gov website, and we can absolutely go out and take a look at that. So those are the basic tools. Amy, we could potentially switch over and take a look at the Internet. I could go to the website and show where these resources are.
Andrew, we're going to go pause at this point and take a few questions, and then we will come back and show the website and, time permitting, do some demos. Is that all right with you?
That works perfectly.
All right. Let me go back. And first of all, thank you very much for that overview. It looks like some really excellent resources there.
You're welcome.
Now, folks, to ask a question or make a comment, you please type it in the Q&A panel, not in the chat panel. Makes it easier for us. Then I will read the questions aloud, and then our guests will respond to them via the bridge. Please do keep your question or comment related to today's topic and reasonably concise. And if you have any particular experience in this area in your own community and would like to share efforts and or ideas that you have used, I'm sure we would be just happy to hear about those too. We already begin now, so please enter your comment or question at any time. I'm going to take this first one from Isabel McCurdy, and she asks, Andrew, is flood insurance too costly for most consumers? And then I would like to pile on to that a little bit, Andrew, and ask you if you have the numbers, you know, what the average premium cost is in a special flood hazard area versus outside.
Certainly. Great question, Isabel. You know, flood insurance can go as little as $129 a year for a policy, but that's really the cheapest and the smallest amount of coverage, so we don't want to be misleading to the consumer in that regard. We look at flood insurance by whether you're in a special flood hazard area, which is the highest risk area, or the non-special flood hazard area, which is the moderate to low risk area. And keep in mind, the largest number of consumers out there are in the moderate to low risk category. So if we look at that singularly, and we know that the entry point for protection is as little as $129 a year, it can be quite affordable for the consumer who may not experience flooding on a regular basis, but may have the potential based on where they live. And, of course, we know that everybody lives in a flood zone. How severe the flooding occurs there or not is based on a number of different factors. Now, when we look at average costs of a non-flood hazard area policy, you're going to be looking probably more in the $400 to $500 range to provide content as well as structure coverage for that home. And there's a number of variables in there. The coverage for houses can go up to $250,000 and for contents $100,000. So it's important to look at what options best suit you. Are you in an area where you're likely to have flooding or there is a potential have flooding even though you're moderate to low risk? Then look at how high you feel that would go based on historical records and you know the value of your home and the value of the contents. So you may not need protection to cover all floors of your structure, but to provide a basic level of coverage for the first floor might be appropriate. So each consumer is going to have to evaluate their situation and determine. But it is very cost effective for a majority of the consumers. Now, we talk about special flood hazard areas, the high-risk folks who live in flood zones that are very likely to flood or coastal environments where there is a higher risk of flooding because of hurricane type activity or tropical storm activity, then the costs are much higher. And to say that it's affordable, well, really depends on your level of income. So it is very pricey, and I'll let you know right now, if you have not been following the Reform Act of 2012 that just recently passed through the House and Senate and was signed into law by President Obama, that has started to remove certain subsidies that have been in place for years. Those subsidies will be removed in 25% increments over a course of 4 years until it's fully implemented. So those people who have been buying flood insurance or considering flood insurance at subsidized rates they're going to see significant increases. And we are just starting to understand what the impacts of those are, and we are working on messaging. And none of these really will go into effect till January of 2013. So we have time to work with you and others in the community, kind of prepare people for this eventuality.
And remind me, Andrew, is flood insurance available to renters?
It is available to renters, absolutely. Now, typically as a renter, you're only going to be interested in
content right.
protection. But it's also available to condominium owners. So if you know, many of the coastal communities have residential condominium complexes, and while the condominium association that owns the overall building may have coverage on the building, the individual condominium unit owner can also have coverage to ensure that they're protected to the level that they feel comfortable.
And business owners, I know that one for a fact because I am a condominium owner here in Texas, and I do have flood insurance. So
there you go. So you really have to understand what protections are available through your condominium association, and then look to see if that is going to protect you sufficiently in your own unit.
Right, and one would expect the renters, if they're just doing contents, that would be fairly affordable.
Oh, yes, it would be very affordable. I don't have rate information right in front of me, renters, but, yes, I mean, we're talking, low amounts. So.
Yeah, and I had a niece that was a renter that got flooded out in Vermont last year, so it can happen.
And small business owners especially, I mean, a lot of large businesses will have commercial liability policies that will call it kind of umbrella everything. But for the smaller business owner who may be leasing their facility, they may want to look at contents coverage as well.
Oh, very interesting. That's a good point.
If they do own their own facility, then they should look at both structure and content protection if they don't have that kind of liability policy that through their commercial insurance.
Great. Okay, Ada Jean has a question. She says, thanks, Andrew. In trying to bring flooding issues to citizens, are you aware how closely emergency managers and floodplain managers work together? Does this vary from state to state or community to community?
Well, we seek to work with everybody. So in our approaches from marketing, we have to take several different approaches to working with communities. We don't have an endless budget. It would be nice, but we have to take the budget that we're afforded and spread it most effectively. So while we work all across the nation, we do target certain communities that have a higher propensity to flooding than others to target specific initiatives at that level to get consumers to go ahead and protect themselves effectively. But it doesn't have to be in the number one flooded communities. It can also be seen in some what we call tier two communities that may flood less frequently, but do have major flooding disasters. And so, for example, in the state of Tennessee, they got hit on kind of both ends last year with a series of floods that really devastated communities across the state. And we identify that as a specialty market because, you know, they're not coastal or they're not in one of the major river valleys, et cetera. So we look at their specific needs across the state and are looking to engage with them at a community level and do specific programs. So we try to work with not only floodplain management, but any other community officials like emergency managers who are dealing with these issues firsthand. And so if there's a need in your specific community, you know, feel free to contact us and we can figure out what level of support we can provide you, whether that's sending people out to come and talk to audiences, whether it's sending you materials. Sometimes we have giveaways that we can give to the public that help reinforce the message and is an enticement for them to come in. And we can look at special media events where we can use our resources working with the media at the local level and maybe get you some more support that you don't normally get from your media partners in your local community. So I would say, yes, it varies from state to state and community to community. It's really driven by the activities in those communities and how much they reach out to us to partner and then where they fit in the overall priority scheme for us to engage.
Do you do a certain schedule each year on some of the major conferences, either the professional associations or industry-type conferences?
Absolutely. In fact, we hit about 50 conferences in the course of a year. Most of those are more national level or in those high propensity communities.
Right.
So, for example, we had a number of conferences along the Gulf Coast and the Southeast coastline, Atlanta coastline this year, but not exclusively. We targeted some other communities across the United States, worked with the National Association of Floodplain and Stormwater Management, as well as the Association of State Floodplain Managers, National Association of Counties, so some of those larger nationwide kinds of organizations where we can reach a large number of stakeholders all at once. But we do something like we're doing right here today. We engage with community and state-level organizations through webinars. And so if we have communities that want to get in and get understanding, we can set up these types of interchanges, which are maybe more cost-effective than sending our resources and our exhibits, et cetera, out to conventions. But we do have a robust conference and events schedule, and we're always looking to new opportunities. We did NEMA last fall. I did the Virginia Emergency Management Association this spring. And so we do seek to work with those communities.
Very good. And I'd like to ask you one more question about, you mentioned your partnership with the National Weather Service and or the NOAA Coastal Program, I suppose. Can you talk a little bit more about what you all work together on?
Absolutely. Well, we work on a number of fronts. I mean, specialty areas are focused right now on levee issues,
right.
Dam issues, and coastal issues. There's a number of multi-agency task forces that are working to try and ensure that all agencies are working towards a common goal, that we're using consistent messaging, and that we can combine the power and resources of multiple agencies to reach a broader number of not only community officials, but members of the public. So, for example, we are working with the Silver Jackets to at a state level.
I'm sorry, what is the Silver Jackets?
I'm sorry?
What is the Silver Jackets?
The Silver Jackets are a interagency working group. It's part of the Corps of Engineers, and they are working more at the state level to try and bring state-level partners together on issues around flooding, infrastructure, levees, dams, et cetera. So it's broader than just flooding, but they are a community, just like the emergency management community, that we are working with because they are a combination of different agencies working together. And so there is in every state, I'm pretty sure in every state, I know the majority of states have a Silver Jackets group, but it falls into the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. They're the ones that are leading that up.
Got
so it's, again, it's another group that we can work with to try and extend the reach of FEMA and FloodSmart to even more communities.
This is an interesting question from Kelly Merritt. She says, with the current drought, are the affected communities less likely to prepare for flooding? How should public officials address these communities?
Well, you know, it's a great question, Kelly, because the thought is that, well, if we're in a drought condition, that we're really not going to be at much of a flood risk. But any of you who have dealt in a drought environment, as soon as the rains come, that ground is so parched that it can't quickly absorb the water, and so we have a greater flooding issue as a result of the drought. But because we have this misconception that, oh, well, we have a drought, so when the rain comes, you know, we're not going to have a problem, the ground will just absorb it, and everything will be great again, really is not true. And so we have to ensure that community officials are not communicating the wrong messages in time of drought, because eventually the rain will come, and even if it's a smaller amount of rain, you can have localized flooding as a result of the drought conditions. So it is definitely one of those things that we continue to focus on in our communications, that, you know, it's one of the typical forms of flooding that occur, post-drought flooding. And I'd like to tack on to that what is happening right now across the nation with wildfires. People don't necessarily connect wildfires with flooding. It's kind of you know, an interesting oxymoron there. But when we get the ground scorched and removed of all its vegetation, then we have runoff issues. There's less for the water to absorb. In fact, the structure of the earth at the surface that has been burned actually makes it difficult to absorb the water. So you have an increased potential of runoff and therefore flooding, and it's complicated with mud and soot and ash, all that coming together to make a really horrendous mixture of material to drag through anybody's property. So we want to make sure that people understand that whether it's drought or whether it's wildfires or development, all these things which are not in the forefront of their thinking as causing flooding is now in the forefront of their thinking, and that they are prepared for it.
I did want to leave some time for you to show the website, Andrew, so I'm going to go ahead and pass the control back to you, and if you would like to set up your desktop sharing, let's move to that.
Sounds good. Give me a second here to get it up and going. One of the things, I noticed a question that floated by with regard to the community ratings system. The CRS is, you're probably familiar with that, but not every single community is in the CRS. So I wanted to address that particular issue. We work with CRS very closely, and I think the question was really around the potential that CRS is going to integrate with the FloodSmart website. And we are actually working with CRS to integrate their content into FloodSmart.gov, and it will be present in a section like Community Resources, where you will have all the access to information that CRS is putting out through the website. So that will be in the near future. We're going through a major redesign effort right now, and I don't have a definitive date, but it's going to be late fall or probably winter this year before that content is integrated. We're in the development phase right now and making sure that we meet all their requirements. So this is FloodSmart.gov. Can you see that okay, Amy? I want to make sure.
Yes, it's coming across very nicely. I will point out to folks that because of this live streaming, there's a slight loss of resolution, but it seems to be displaying very well.
So over on the left-hand side of the screen, we have the basic navigation menu, and you'll find Community Resources linked there. And this is really the page that we designed for folks just like you, to provide you the resources that are focused to a community official who is trying to get the word out versus the general public. So we've tried to frame the messaging and provide the tools that you would need in that regard. As you can see, we have three different tabs here. We're on the Getting Started page. We have one on flooding in your community, where we actually talk about what you do after a flood, heavy rain situations, hurricanes, levee failures, map changes, wildfires. So most of the common issues are addressed right here to help you position the correct information with a consistent message to your constituents. And we also have the Tools and Resources tab, which has a series of tools that are available to you. And we have interactive tools and banners. We have materials, and we provide links to these materials that would be available to you that might be useful. We also have toolkits. I brought that up on the presentation before. So a basic flood outreach toolkit. So this is a series, a collection of different pieces of marketing literature that you can use to communicate the issue of flooding out to your community. We have one that's designed specifically around map changes in your community. And then if you are a levee community, we have specific tools around communicating the issues associated with levees. We do have a whole series of testimonials, as I mentioned earlier. We just put one up this summer on levee issues, and these are actually senior officials. In fact, David Miller, our associate administrator of the Flood Insurance Program, is interviewed here. I was interviewed before he left Iowa as the emergency manager. But we have a couple of other officials, as well as Corps of Engineers, talking about flooding issues and levees specifically. So that might be of interest to you, as well as a series of other videos. I'm not going to play them right now because they're not going to come across very effectively, but I encourage you to go out and explore. We have one that's tailored towards commercial, et cetera. So poke around and see what will appeal to you and to the folks in your community. And then I mentioned before the widgets. We have one around seasonal flooding. We have the hurricane season, which we're in right now. We'll be doing a peak hurricane season media blitz at the end of this month. And then we have the flood after fire tool. And these, again, can all be embedded on your websites. If you're not comfortable doing it, again, your webmaster should be able to pull this down pretty easily and put it on your website. So those are the sorts of tools. We don't really have time to go into each one, but please go in there, check them out. And if you don't see something that you need, feel free to reach out to FloodSmart. We have so many different resources that are in our archives. There may be something that's very tailored to what you need. So just because it's not here and you can't see it, please let us know. And as you see here on the right-hand side of the screen, we have an email link for you to go ahead and contact us with. So that's those are the resources specifically designed for you. And then you have this whole website that you can direct your citizens to get more information on flooding and flood risk, flood insurance, whether they're residential or commercial. And we also have preparedness and recovery information here that we can direct them to. So it's not just all about the preparedness. We also do have other resources, and we link to FEMA.gov, et cetera, for that.
I do see the what could flooding cost me. Okay, that's the risk.
Right. So if you wanted to check out your own personal risk,
right,
you can go into the flood risk profile and type your address. You notice that we don't collect any personal information, no names, cell phone numbers, et cetera. So you just put your information in there on your address and indicate whether it's residential. And then, for example, if I put in my address, have to be able to type effectively. I'm here in Northern Virginia. And I can go ahead and click this. This is a very quick way for the system to come back and give me an idea. So as you will see, I get my flood risk profile. It tells me I am at a moderate to low risk for flooding and gives me some estimated annual premium costs. So contents, I range from the smallest amount of coverage to largest, and same for the building, and then combined. So as you can see, can get that $129 preferred risk policy if I want the minimum amount of coverage, and that's the kind of the entry point for non-special flood hazard areas. And then it also will give me a listing of agents. This is based on my proximity to the agent's offices, but I can go through this link and actually get a whole list of agents that could be available to me.
And do you actually make some means available for the agents to put their own information in, keep it updated?
Yes, agents have to participate in what we call the referral program. And so we have a separate website known as agents.floodsmart.gov. And I'll just show you that. And this is a website entirely structured for the insurance agent. So it's more about how they can sell flood insurance. It provides them education and training information, marketing information, how to sell a policy, et cetera. And through this website, they can register, as you can see up here on the right-hand side, they can register to be a part of the FloodSmart program, and they can receive referrals so that when a homeowner does a search, then if they are the closest, they will have their name and information come up and get a referral.
Very good.
And we also, not only can they do this through the website, but those consumers who still prefer to call a telephone number and get that support, we have the toll-free number here up at the top of the page, and that goes to the FloodSmart call center, and they can help identify an agent in the area, as well as get additional information to the consumer on flood risk and flood insurance. And that's basically the straightforward portion of the website. I could go into a lot more, but I think, Amy, should we look at
that? Very good. Yeah, I think we'll start wrapping it up. I did want to point out on our background page for today's program, I did add a link, which is directly to the community tools portion of the website. So. Okay, well, I will take back control here, Andrew, and we are going to wrap it up for today. I don't see any other questions in the queue.
Amy, I did see one flyby earlier about flood maps, and it's an area I'm not an expert on because that falls under the mitigation division at FIMA, but I just wanted to mention that since we had another minute, that you know, the idea of transmitting flood maps is certainly a great idea, and we want to try and get that information out there. There's a series of technical challenges in doing that right now, and it's outside of the purview of FloodSmart to address that. But the mitigation division is looking at ways to get that information out more easily. What we do through FloodSmart is provide information on FloodSmart.gov on how you can find your flood maps, and that links over to FEMA.gov. And we also provide information on map changes when they're going to be occurring based on information fed to us by FEMA and mitigation division. So I like the concept of being able to have more real-time flood maps available in times of emergencies. I think there's just a series of technical challenges that we face before we'll be able to get to that point.
Okay, let's wrap it up. And on behalf of Ava Jean and myself and all our participants today, thank you very much, Andrew, for sharing this information with us. As I said, I think that there's some very usable resources there on your site. And we wish you continued success as you move forward with your efforts.
Great. Thank you, Amy. And give us a call if you need us.
All right. Very well. Folks, before you run off, please do take a moment to give us a little feedback on the program. And again, if you're not on our mailing list, please just go to our homepage to subscribe to get our program announcements. And you can also find us on Twitter and Facebook. Don't forget, we are offering CEUs for attending our programs, and you can also find a link to that information from our homepage. Please note, our next program is planned for August 29th. We had 5 Wednesdays this month, so we are moving that to the end of the month. So please do plan to join us then. Thanks to everyone for participating today. Really appreciate the good questions. Have a great afternoon. We are adjourned. Bye, everyone.